Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart.
Calling it an off week would just not be accurate.
Improvement week.
It is an improvement week, but Ohio State's not playing on Saturday. No. I think that's the part that maybe we're missing. You can't say it's an entire off week because Bloody Tuesday, that practice is going to be intense. Mm-hmm. Wednesday in the Woody, bet that's going to be pretty intense. Mm-hmm. Tuesday at noon, Ryan Day, very Matt Patricia, intense. Brian Hartline talking. So they don't have the day off. No. And we definitely don't have the day off because you know what else Tuesday is?
It's a talking Tuesday.
It is a talking Tuesday on the beat. This is 10TV's Adam King. I am Austin Ward. Breaking it down on the beat. Full day. When you get both coordinators and Ryan Day, now that's the only media availability of the week, so we've got to make sure that we bring our A games for that. But, you know, I'm pretty excited to hear from them, Matt Patricia and Brian Hartline, because we haven't in a few weeks.
Well, my first question, and I don't know if I need to ask Brian Hartline or Ryan Day.
You can ask them both.
Yeah, at the same time. Is when will Bo Jackson be named the starting running
back? Oh, here we go.
Do we have to
feels very Julian Sayin-ish from early August on a Talking Tuesday.
Yes, and I just to be clear, it's not going to happen against Washington. He's not going to be named the starting running back. He may, again, get the most carry. But there just seems to be an excitement in the running back room. I mean, C.J. Donaldson, even after the game, I talked to him, and he was excited about watching Bo Jackson run. And he and Bo Jackson complement each other very well. So I think it's time that we let the best player play. I'm sure Ryan Day, I'm sure Brian Hartline and Carlos Lachlan wanted to see him take the reins. They didn't want to give it to him and say, hey, you know, because there's the other world where we're sitting here in week three, like, why are we playing this freshman so much? It's not working.
Right.
And so...
Oh, it's working.
It's working. So first question, when do you name him a starter? And what makes him so good? Is it also that his name is Bo Jackson?
Well, I mean, clearly things can develop in a hurry. Because talking Tuesday a week ago, the conversation was, how much are you going to balance the explosiveness that you saw off your Ohio State from Bo Jackson against Grambling versus the concern that the coaching staff may have and clearly expressed to him and emphasized on the practice field about ball security and that last attempt against Grambling. Didn't put it on the field, didn't put it on the turf against Ohio. You know, does that mean that he's out of the woods in that entirely? That's only up to the coaching staff to say, but given the volume of work and when he got it on Saturday against Ohio, it very much feels like they are ready to let him off the leash and go get loose and drive that Lambo a little bit moving forward. I don't know why you would fault them for that at all, because the thing that Ryan Day kept, he was repeating over and over about the run game. They were getting 5, 6, 7 yards a carry, but it was pretty much limited to that. Like he was harping on the lack of explosiveness. Not sure what more you can ask for than 64 yards on the first play of the third quarter from Bo Jackson on Saturday. So feels like it's trending that way. Is it going to be against Washington on the road against a Big Ten opponent? I don't know, maybe not. But it doesn't feel like it's that far away.
I think it's very interesting that Washington is next, because that is a game that you have to make choices. This isn't a game where you can come in, OU, yes, they were a great team. They could have played Bryce West to start the game, and they would have been fine. They would have won the game.
It would have been weird if they started Bryce West and not Isaiah West.
I said Bryce West. Yes, I appreciate that.
We're a team.
Yes, we are. When I said it, I thought, that sounds off, but thank you. Yes. They could have started Isaiah West.
But they probably could have started Bryce West.
They could have started. My point exactly. Yeah, sorry. They could have started Isaiah West at running back and still won. You can't do that against Washington. You have to make the call on the field. And so I think what we see in that first drive against the Huskies is going to tell us everything. And it also helps that you have 2 weeks if you're making this transition or trying to give him more load to bear. That leads me to my second question, which goes to the other side of the ball, and it goes to Matt Patricia. What is going on at defensive tackle? I saw Matt Patricia and Edrick Houston share like a really intense moment before the game. I loved it. Definitely a player's coach when you see a moment like that. And then we saw Edrick Houston not start the game. And so what is the rotation there? Was that a one-off? Are we going to see Edrick take the role back over? Was this a chance to try to get Tyrone Malone going a little bit more? What is the plan there?
Yeah, if it was tied to getting Tyrone Malone going, I'm not sure that Ohio State really accomplished that on Saturday. And he spent multiple years developing at Ohio State. I thought he looked great physically. We talked about him coming out of the softball game in the summer and the changes that he made. And like, this is that opportunity to show the physical maturity, the mental maturity, all that, the experience, and take that to the field. It's just, it is not quite resonating at the, certainly not compared to Ty Hamilton or Tylik Williams a year ago, but even what we think the upside, and to be fair, Edrick Houston hasn't shown the five-star snap in, snap out game wrecking ability that we've projected through the first couple of weeks. And so if it was related to Tyrone Malone, I'm not sure that what was on film on Saturday against Ohio merits keeping him out there in that first role. And if there is something about, which I think, if I'm just going to speculate wildly, and hopefully we get a more direct answer from Matt Patricia or Ryan Day, if it was related to the two penalties against Grambling for Edrick Houston, like, hey, you're going to have to pay the cost for that and you might miss the first quarter. If it was, any other kind of issue behind the scenes.
That's interesting.
Like, we may not get an answer for that because he came in once they got to the second quarter, Edrick Houston was out there. Once you got to the third quarter, the normal rotation was back with Edrick Houston next to Caden McDonald. So maybe we won't get an exact answer about what it is, but I would tend to guess that it probably is tied into the penalties the week before and sending a message and a coaching point, because I don't think that you're really going to shuffle up that rotation. If they're going to go where they need to go, like, Edrick Houston has to be
on the field. I mean, that's, Edrick Houston is one of the guys that you circle and say, if he reaches his full potential, this team is going to win a national title. He's one of those guys where if he can step it up, I mean, the sky's the limit, because that defensive tackle and defensive ends is still growing. They're still meshing together. I mean, one of my biggest questions, I don't know who I would ask this for, is what's it going to, I feel like we do this every year. It's so funny. And Ryan Day always says, it's not about sacks, it's about pressures.
Yeah. And they affecting the quarterback.
And they had, four sacks against Parker Navarro. They looked great doing it.
Bo Atkinson definitely affected him.
Yes, he did. Effective. I don't know which one it is, nor will I ever know. I took a class on it. Don't remember.
Bo Atkinson affected Parker Navarro with the hit, and the effect was he didn't want to be out there anymore.
You go. He tried to trip Kenyatta Jackson. sorry. When you look at Bo Atkinson and Kenyatta and Caden Curry and these guys out there, how do you get more pressure from those guys, which was great against OU, so that you don't have to continue to scheme up things from the secondary and from the linebackers? Because imagine how good this team is going to be when you're not sending Arvell Reese off the edge, once a drive, but you can do it and shock the other team.
Yeah.
And so my question there is, like, what is the next step for this unit as a whole? Where, and it's a weird question to ask with four sacks, and they looked great, and they contained, I mean, Washington's quarterback can run just like Parker Navarro can. So they contained him from running. But I need to see that next step from them as a unit, as a whole. And that includes Edrick Houston, includes Malone. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Yeah, they need some production from that spot. And I think you include Edrick Houston and Tyrone Malone together there. I don't think that either one of them have had the impact that Ohio State would be looking for through three games. So that's going to have to get better as you get through the Big Ten slate. And there is almost a separate conversation with that pass rush and the tackles for loss and the sacks. Like, Caden Curry and Caden McDonald are providing that. They're getting it done. Mm-hmm. Kenyatta Jackson looks like maybe, we know he left game one with that injury, had a knee brace on Saturday. Is he not at full strength? Like, I don't know. We have to put three separate conversations together for the pass rush. But if the end result is that they have to keep using Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese, like,
It's probably going to work. Yeah, it's not a bad end result. Going off of that, one thing talking about injuries, big question, what is the plan moving forward if Lorenzo has to miss extended time here? And, he had a big ice pack on his shoulder.
Did you talk to him on Saturday?
Lorenzo? Did you talk to him?
Yeah.
He said he was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said he's feeling good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah. But you can say that. People say it all the time and then they still take precautionary measures. The interesting part is who was out there when Lorenzo was hurt, is they shifted the whole defense around to get Devin Sanchez on the field. And so my question is, if Lorenzo isn't out there, is that the look you go with to start against Washington? And even if Lorenzo is out there, is that how close Devin is to getting on this field week in and week out, that you're shifting guys around to get him on the field because you feel that's stronger for your defense?
It's a great question, and it's an important question for Matt Patricia, because primarily we are seeing Ohio State operate with that nickel look being their base group. I wasn't expecting that would be the solution.
No.
Lorenzo came out that Jermaine Matthews would go into the nickel, play in the slot, and Devin Sanchez would move out to the outside corner. We talked about it a lot over the summer and coming out of spring, because when they rotated, and it felt like the practices we saw were about 50-50. When Lorenzo Styles came out, Jermaine Matthews moved into the nickel spot and Aaron Scott played at outside corner, and thought, oh, that's probably the solution here. You know, maybe Bryce West is make a push here to play. Maybe Miles Lockhart could be a combination of Malik Hartford or Jalen McClain. That was the offseason conversation. Clearly, Jalen McClain has solidified himself in that safety spot, and you're not going to move him around. But then you got into a game, and the thing that they trusted most, and that game was not over when Lorenzo Styles got injured.
It was a fourth down play that was massive.
Yeah, it was still a pivotal part, and it was not the blowout that it finally became there in the fourth quarter. Jermaine moves in there, and Devin Sanchez is on the field. So, that wasn't just, I don't think, experiment or just Devin's here, let's try this as the first thing available. Now they have a week and a half to practice, and maybe Aaron Scott, Bryce West, some combination presents as a better or another option perhaps by the time you get to Washington. But I think the indication is that Lorenzo Styles is going to be healthy enough to go out there with especially no game on Saturday, extra time to recover.
It's
definitely relevant, because that's the first look we've seen at, okay, what would be the backup option for Ohio State? Because again, going back to Texas, and even throughout this preseason slate, if we're going to call it that, with Ohio and Grambling, they didn't rotate at all against Texas in the secondary. Lorenzo Styles took every snap. You had Jermaine Matthews taking every defensive snap. Davis and Igbenosin, same thing. Like we didn't have a glimpse at it. And then when they started rotating more, it was almost more wholesale changes in the following game against Grambling. And now we know this was a pivotal moment of the game. Jermaine's going in there to nickel, and Devin Sanchez is on the field. Like, that's significant.
It's massive. And kudos to Devin Sanchez, because the one thing that I've been beyond impressed with at Ohio State, and you know what, kudos to Ryan Day and the coaching staff, is that they are no longer allowing the term freshman to impact whether you can make an impact on the field. And I feel like in college football, that's changed a lot, but especially right now at Ohio State, if you are good enough to get on the field, you're going to play at Ohio State. Freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, doesn't matter who's in front of you, unless they're just better than you or have been playing for 3 straight years and getting ready for their senior season. Going to the other side.
I think I should just let you do the entire. I think as a beat, we should just let you run it, because I've agreed with every question.
Well, that's so good.
Tuesday is going to be a showcase for you.
Thank you. I'm so excited. Get one of those. That's a good question. That's my dream. You get one of those. That's a good question. You just write it down.
Does it feel good?
You take a selfie. That's where I was.
I have known coaches who've said it facetiously, though, so you have to be careful.
Gotta think back.
But that's not the case right here.
I gotta think back on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Maybe my question about how important is the crowd wasn't as good as I thought it was.
Great question.
Yeah, really great question.
Phenomenal.
All right, my other question, then I go to the offense, and we get Brian Hartline. We haven't talked to him in a while. He's been up in the booth.
He has been.
What has it been like for him up in the booth?
I bet he's going to be so excited for you to ask that.
Yeah, I bet it's going to be the 800th question. But I don't actually care about, somebody said the other day, it's like playing a video game. I care about what's it been like to not be involved on a play-to-play basis with the rotation of the wide receivers.
Right.
Because.
What rotation?
Exactly. Thank you. It's how much has that impacted the rotation? If he was down on the sideline, I just feel like we would see more of a Mylan go. And we're not. We're seeing Brandon. We're seeing Jeremiah and Carnell. We've talked a lot that you don't want to take those guys off the field. But there is some concern about the fact that we haven't seen Mylon Graham. We haven't seen Quincy Porter. We haven't seen any of these guys.
There's too many tight ends.
It's too many tight ends.
Keenan Bailey's winning the fight.
I know. And it's not a bad problem to have. But I am wondering if him not being down there, because he is a guy that likes to rotate him. And we hear them talk so much about how important rotation is in a 16-game season.
Yeah.
I just wonder if being up there, he's so locked in on the play calling, which is good. His play calling has been good. I thought people were frustrated with the red zone play calling against Ohio.
I don't know
why. There were missed opportunities. There was guys running wide open.
The call to C.J. Donaldson on the first drive.
Perfect.
Wide open. The call for Brandon Ennis on wide the second, like, second quarter drive. Wide open. Yeah. Like, the calls so were, there was nothing wrong.
There was, it was just missed first reads. But I do wonder if that's been the biggest shift for him. Is he's just really not involved with the wide receiver in the game, mm-hmm. and how has that changed? I know that, well, it's a different scope. You know, that question's going to be asked, but
yeah,
has that impacted rotation?
And I think we talked about this a few weeks ago as well, especially going into the Texas game. Like, the temptation to just want to play Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate is, like, I don't know how you're supposed to fight that. Like, they're so good. And when the game is hanging in the balance, the last thing you want to do is see number four on the sideline. It has been interesting that walk-on or former walk-on, I don't know if David Adolph's been given a scholarship or not. Guess we'll have to clarify that. Like, he's had a fair number of opportunities to go in the game and do some run blocking, and he's often going in for Jeremiah Smith as a not like-for-like substitution. They don't,
very similar.
They don't do the same thing. But I think that's interesting because they're using Adolph in places where you could potentially have Bryson Rogers or Mylon Graham or Quincy Porter or anybody else to go out there and do that, but they're not. They're choosing a different path. And then you're also seeing a ton of, as we mentioned, that tight end 12, 13, 14 personnel that they've been using so much. Like, that also is coming at the expense of some of that wide receiver rotation. So there's a bunch of factors at play here. And I don't even think we are bringing it up as a nitpick. Like, why aren't you playing more wide receivers? It's just an interesting question.
It's
just the way that they've decided to build this offense.
And I just, I'm not upset about it. I wouldn't want to take those three guys off the field.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's two things colliding to equal that. I wonder if it's these three guys are really good and he's up in the box. And so together, it's just like, all right, let's just let them run. Let's not mess with, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. My other question is, and I don't know if Ryan Day would admit this, but I think aside from the throw against Grambling in the end zone, I think we can all agree, the only throw that didn't get completed, although it did get caught.
It was completed.
Yes, to the wrong team. The throw when he was getting sacked, where you just have to take the sack. I don't know that I would have thought Julian Sands' start would look this good. And so I wonder if Ryan himself is pretty surprised at just how, kind of, we joked a couple weeks ago about the Maroon 5 vibe, and just how fluid he is out there. And Ryan used the word command and consistent all offseason.
Yep.
Julian is in command of this offense. And Julian is incredibly consistent right now out there. His worst struggles were missing guys on the reads there against OU.
Yeah.
And I thought in that moment, boy, if this is the worst, I mean, he threw for 300 yards. If this is what we're upset about, you're having a pretty good day. His deep balls looked great. He looks in command. He looks comfortable. Even against Texas, I know it's a couple games ago now, but like, there's just this vibe that like he is the right guy for the job.
Yeah.
I get my lie detector Ryan Day question.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, did you think you'd be sitting here in the bye week feeling this good about Julian Sand?
Yeah, I don't. I think he might answer that anyway. I think he would say no.
Yeah.
I think this has been, and he, I think, was pretty transparent about that coming out of the Texas game, that they were not prepared for him to be as game ready as he was in that game. Like, I don't think that was lip service. There's no benefit to selling it that way, mm-hmm. because basically he's talking about himself and Brian Hartline and Billy Fester. Like, what? Because he mentioned that throughout camp. You make assumptions about your team, and then you build a game plan accordingly, and then you find out if those are correct or incorrect. And they seem to undersell the ability that Julian Sayin might have once they got into the season. And so I think the answer is, like, yeah, he's absolutely exceeded what they thought. Now, they knew what the upside would be. Everyone has for years when he's a five-star recruit and Alabama's, you know, trying to, they do sign him and he shows up and he enrolls on campus. Like the best programs in the country knew what the arm talent could be, what the accuracy was going to look like, with the quick processing, the IQ of football, like all that was there. But then to go out and do it as quickly and at the level that he has through three games, and like, there's a test in a week and a half at Washington on the road. That's going to be the first time he's dealt with all that stuff. But boy, would I be surprised if he's fazed by that, because there's nothing so far that suggests that he would be.
You expect to see flashes of greatness in a young quarterback, and then that's what gives you hope. We've seen flashes of concern and just an overwhelming performance of greatness.
Right.
Like it's been like, oh, okay, that's right. This is his third game. Oh, that's his first time really being in that scenario. Oh, that's his first sack. Like, that's crazy. It's beyond impressive what he's done. And my final question for Ryan Day, it's kind of an outlier. You know what? We'll call it a bye week question.
Awfully.
Did you see improvement week question? Did you see Brian Kelly in his rant at a reporter?
Sure did.
In LSU. And how the reporter, he needed to appreciate the fact that LSU had just beaten Florida by X amount. I want to ask Ryan Day. I think he called the reporter spoiled, which is a bold move to after. Okay. Do you ever feel that Ohio State as an entity is spoiled and that we all need just to take a deep breath? And I know he will never give that answer, but this is talking.
I wish you a lot of good fortune asking this question.
Because I feel like it's got to be true. Like, how Brian Hartline handled that, or I'm sorry, how Brian Hartline didn't. How Brian Kelly.
You need to be careful, my friend.
Yes, how Brian Kelly answered that question was terrible. But how I would imagine, like, it's a good point. Like, they just beat Florida, and the first question is like, why is the run game terrible? And that's what I feel like it is for Ryan Day, week in and week out. It's exhausting. And so, you know, they beat OU, and the first question is like, boy, that red zone, they only won by 28. And it's because the red zone did struggle. But I do wonder if there are times when Ryan Day would watch that video and be like, all right, it's a little much.
Gosh, I wonder if that thin skin might have anything to do with the fact that Brian Kelly isn't winning national championships.
I would agree.
Notre Dame. I mean, that's...
The first comment I saw on Twitter said, imagine him at Ohio State. It would not work.
I don't, you know, wouldn't do Ryan Day any good to address that.
No. And for one. This is a hypothetical talking Tuesday.
100%. No, I agree with you. I understand why you bring it up as well, because we hyperfixate on the things that don't go close to perfect for Ohio State. I mean, this is the biggest program, the reigning national champions, largest, most passionate fan base. Like, and we, on this show, we talk about Ohio State football every day of the year.
Yeah.
So that doesn't exist.
And they only play a scheduled 12 days a year.
So all of that being said, there is a lot of, you know, negatives that are focused on more than some of the positives. I think I definitely can be guilty of taking for granted some of the overwhelming positives and then looking at the way that they could get closer to perfection. That's also the standard that they set in the Woody
for themselves. Standard's a standard.
The standard is the standard. And I think when you tie all that together, it is why it takes such a special set of skills and personality to be the head coach at Ohio State. And the thing that you must have more than anything else is truly thick skin. And I think, you know, Jim Tressel had that. Urban Meyer absolutely had that. And Ryan Day has proven that he's got that. It doesn't mean that he's unaware of the criticism or, you know, certainly what happened and the things that you have to deal with in his personal life when you don't beat Michigan. But like, that could have easily caused anyone, human nature, to retreat and back off and lash out, and that didn't happen. And look at what happened because he didn't. There's a national championship trophy for that. So he's not going to say what Brian Kelly did, but Brian Kelly is an idiot.
Well, I actually think you led me to a question that could be perfectly crafted there. And it is, Ryan, do you believe that this program has a continued standard of excellence because you guys are perfectly okay with the conversation being, after a loss, the things you did, or after a win, the things you did wrong.
I don't believe that we can ever be as critical about the red zone or the running game or the pass rush as they are in that building.
Yeah. And like, I think that's probably...
And if they weren't, they wouldn't be winning the games yeah. they have.
You kind of nailed it in your explanation there. Like, I think that is what makes Ohio State unique, is that you walk in there and you say, boy, there were some red zone struggles. Ryan Day wins by 28 points and he's frustrated. He's angry. And I just think that is a different mindset. And it's a beautiful thing to watch.
And that's why I'll want to ask about when Ethan Onyanwa is going to play right guard yeah. on a more permanent basis. Yeah. Because I feel like when you look at this, you're talking about the defensive tackles. I think that's an ongoing issue. It's happened twice now that they've taken Tegra Tshabola out at right guard, had the two penalties, they yanked him out. I think the offenses look pretty productive with Onyanwa out there. So,
do you think it's still a transition thing for him?
I'd like to know what it is.
Because there's no world where he's not out there if he's not a transfer, if that makes sense.
And I think Ryan Day was willing to talk about that with Max Clair at this time a week ago, that like the difficulty of practicing against Ohio State and meeting that standard, play in, play out, game in, game out, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like that Max Clair had maybe struggled with that a little bit in August and carrying that over into the season, and then you're coming out the other side. That I don't know for sure that that's the case with Ethan Onyanwa. And also, Tegra Tshabola has played a ton of football at Ohio State and won a national championship and was a key part of that offensive line a year ago. So, I'm very curious about what the answer is for both players, because that protection and the run blocking and right guard has to be really good, because you are still, you know, if Bo Jackson is out there, then you're blocking for a true freshman running back and you're – quarterback is going to be in his fourth start of his career on the road against Washington, an incredibly hostile, incredibly loud place. So you need to make sure that that offensive line is the best five. And just from the outside, it doesn't seem like that's the case right now. But clearly, their decision is going to trump anything. And why is that what they feel most comfortable with? How is it because of Tegra, or is it because of Ethan, or some combination of both? Probably is the answer. But like, where does it lie, and how will it play out in the weeks ahead? Because that's one of the only spots I think on this roster where you can look at it and be like, I don't know that that is truly settled yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So we'll see. And it's a big week of practice for them to sort that
out. To figure a lot of things out.
You've got a bloody Tuesday. You've got a Wednesday practice. And these critical press conference opportunities for Ryan Day, Brian Hartline, and Matt Patricia, 10 TV, 97.1 The Fan, will both be there for full coverage.
Full coverage.
We'll have snap judgments with Berm afterwards on Tuesday. No snap judgments on Wednesday, because there's no...
Nothing to snap.
No.
There are no snaps.
No media availability that day. And we won't even be able to talk to Adam, because he's taking a true off week and he's getting out of here.
I am taking an improvement week. I was just thinking I might send a video to you with three questions so that you can have it for time.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
From where?
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I don't want the fan. It's the fans that become a problem. Like, I'm trying to enjoy my, and I've got all the autographs. I'm like, no, I get it. I understand. And then I sign one.
You're that guy from The Notebook.
Yes, that's exactly. That's what they say.
That is, yeah.
That's what they say.
It'd be great if we could get to that point,
though. Some guy came up to me like last week and he's like, hey, Adam, you remember me? I'm the one that watches Austin all the time. I'm like, yeah, I remember you. He's like, yeah, I love you on The Notebook. I'm like, love it.
If you can reach one person.
One person.
Then you've accomplished something.
You can change one life.
That's right.
Then you can change the world.
You've changed mine. Every Talkin' Tuesday, it just brightens my day. And hopefully you enjoyed it wherever you're watching. 97.1 The Fan's YouTube channel, 10 TV's YouTube channel, 10 TV Plus, Apple, Spotify, if you want the podcast, the audio only. That's all available to you. And we appreciate you watching. Stick around. We're going to hear from those two coordinators and Ryan Day. And then we're going to talk about it so much more throughout this off week for the Buckeyes. He is Adam King. I'm Austin Ward. We'll talk to you later.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.